In the following podcast, dialogue is condensed from trial transcripts. The story is a recreation of an actual criminal case in Hong Kong. You are about to partake in a Debug podcast. And as always, if you're a pussy, listener discretion is advised. In this episode, I will be covering Hong Kong's infamous Jaws murders, also known as the Rainy Night Killer. Although America leads the way, taking ownership of 67% of the world's serial killers, Asia is a close second. With Japan and India leading the way, with some of the world's most creative serial killers. But there are many experts on the subject that believe that we are selling Asia short. With widespread police corruption and salaries that are performance-based, meaning if unaccounted bodies start turning up, they don't get paid. And then you can add to the fact of large rural areas, adverse poverty, overpopulation. Hell, a country like India probably welcomes a serial killer to come along once in a while and lighten their load. In some of these places, life is cheaper than one of those hookers with no legs riding around on skateboards in Bangladesh.
You know the score.
So we may never know the true number of serial killers in the Far East. In 1982, Hong Kong, a crowded island, with a population topping 5 million and growing steadily. Although an annual 21,000 were leaving permanently each year in preparation for the Chinese takeover. Still under British rule, by 1980 it had become an economical powerhouse. Has one of the safest cities in Asia, and also the best police force. And as of 1982, there'd never been a documented case of a serial killer. But there's no such thing as a sure thing. And I guess the only sure thing there is that there's no such thing as a sure thing. Welcome to Hong Kong's nightclub district, where every day of the week is the weekend. Row after row of joints where you can get your cock sucked, a regular Sodom and Gomorrah. A cesspool, if you will. But like all cesspools, the shit rises to the top. 21-year-old Chun Fern Len worked at one of those clubs, and she stayed late to have drinks with some of her friends. But having a drink or two, or three, too many, she left a little worse for wear. It was about 2:30 a.m. that her friends helped her outside into a cab. Saying goodbye to their drunken friend, promising to meet up the next night, little did they know, her death clock was now ticking.
Oh, the past died yesterday. The future was born today.
It was a week later, on the 12th of February, that a construction worker would find a plastic bag floating in a river. When he opened it, there was a woman's head in it. And over the next 3 weeks, cops would find more plastic bags containing body parts, including the torso that had had its sexual organ cut out. I mean, what sort of man cuts out a pussy? You don't have to answer that. It was a rhetorical question. The only way to identify the body parts, except for the limbs that by chance were all wearing the same nail varnish, was a tattoo on the arm, a two swallows and a heart. And they gave that information to the papers, hoping they'd shake something out of the trees. And I guess if it weren't a mess, they would do until one got there.
All as it is, the sparrow still has all of its vital organs.
Once the story hit the papers, acquaintances came forward and said they knew who the arm belonged to, and probably the rest of the body parts. It was a nightclub hostess slash prostitute. She'd had too much to drink, and they helped her out into a cab. And they said they couldn't tell what the driver looked like for sure, except they were a Chinaman. Huh. I guess they can't even tell each other apart. Meaning that Homicide had their job set up for them. Cause there were almost as many cabs in Hong Kong as Chinamen. And all of those cabs were driven by Chinamen. But the friends also said that the hostess had been married and had two kids. And that her husband wasn't too fond of her sucking cock for a living. But when they checked out the husband, he had an alibi that was tighter than the Velcro strap on a spastic spoon. So at the end of the day, the only lead the cops had was a cab driver who looked like a Chinaman. Which I'm guessing wasn't worth calling out the squad cars for. When the noodle-eating cops got to poking around in their missing person reports, they'd discovered only a couple of weeks earlier that a 17-year-old student had gone missing. She'd gone out to her graduation celebration at a swanky hotel, and she never returned. Her parents said that she'd usually take the train back, but that night they gave her some money for a cab, and that she was a good girl, and she had no cause to run away. Which caused the cops great consternation, because they may have a serial killer loose on their streets. But that's the thing about being a cop in a country that has almost zero crime. When one finally comes along, you don't have much practice to have become good at it. Now Hong Kong Homicide was starting to find the pieces, and all I had to do was put those pieces together. Chan Won Kim was a 31-year-old cashier out having drinks with friends after work. She'd last been seen by those friends hailing a cab. It was after that she disappeared like a ghost. A Chinese ghost. And because these were standard fares, Homicide had no way of tracing who the driver was. Meng Sei Wan was much like the other girls and disappeared a week after the student. She got into a cab. She never got out again.
Abracadabra.
Well, at least not on her own two legs. Now investigators knew one thing for certain, that whoever was doing it had hunger. And when you got a hunger, eventually, you gotta feed. Hong Kong's finest now believed that they had a serial killer on their streets. But still, they had no way to prove it. And yeah, sure, they had parts of a whore who'd washed up on shore, and she was missing a pussy. But as far as physical evidence went, that's where it began and where it ended. The other three girls, well, it was just a hunch. For all that cops knew, they could have all decided to go to Disneyland and liked it so much that they stayed. The only thing that tied it all together were all four of the women who were last seen climbing into a cab. And I guess if it weren't a mess, well, it'd do until one got there. So they kept dragging the river, the bay, or any other puddles they could find looking for body parts. But it was 6 months later when the case was at risk of going cold. The noodle-eating cops got a call from a photo processing joint who just developed some pictures that they figured that the cops, well, they might be interested in. The photos appeared to show young girls that were being cut up, and sometimes while they were still alive. And by the looks of it, they weren't consenting.
The weak mummy, the strong eat.
When investigators staked out the photo joint, they were told by the technician to expect the cab driver in his early 30s to pick up the pictures. And although the technician couldn't say for sure if usual behavior was to go by, the taxi driver should be back that night to pick up his film. And sure enough, he arrived, and about 20 detectives undercover swooped in and arrested him. Of course, he denied it and said he was picking him up for a friend. But no one's that good of a friend, and they knew they had that Chinaman. And that Chinaman was 27-year-old Lam Khao Wan. When they checked his cab, they found some handcuffs and a knife. And while they took him in for questioning, they sent their amigos over to check out where he lived. But the first thing they notice is that if the cab driver did it, He had balls big enough for a fruit basket, because he was as cool as a cucumber. When they got to his apartment, they found out he lived with his father, mother, and younger brother. When they started tearing apart the room he shared with his brother, they found Tupperware jars hidden that appeared to contain preserved meat, along with a trunk full of surgical journals, photographs, and videotapes, along with precision cutting tools. It was then that they realized that the jars hidden in the closet and under the bed weren't meat, but they were body parts, and thousands of photographs of those body parts, and the victims being dismembered were the missing girls. It was because the apartment was so small, they figured that the father and the brother must have been in on it as well, and they arrested them both. But when they played the videotapes, they were shocked that it was the cab driver alone. He had a multiple camera set up and filmed himself cutting them up, murdering them, and then having sex with their corpses. With one clip showing him smiling into the camera as he takes the virginity off of a 17-year-old corpse. As the details of the crime started to unfold, the city was horrified. A crime that was too unfathomable to even imagine. At first, the taxi cab driver denied anything to do with the crimes, but when the cops attempted to implicate his younger brother and father, he admitted to the whole thing, saying that he'd handcuffed the girls and gagged them, and then he'd hide them under the couch until his family went to work, and then he'd pull them out. And that's when the fun would begin.
He told the cops that he killed the girls because they were all drunken whores.
And that whenever it rained, he got the hunger. And when he got that hunger, he had to feed. And with murderous precision, he went about and found his victims. With one girl, he considered letting go. But when she threw up in his cab, she sealed her own fate. With only one of the murders he regretted, that was the 17-year-old student. He confessed that he really liked her, and with her handcuffed in the front seat with him, he drove around all night debating whether to kill her or not. Finally, the hunger won out, and he strangled her in the front seat, and took her home and fucked her corpse and filmed it, but admitted having to put tape over her eyes because she was looking at him, which he considered a real boner killer. Which, to be honest with you, if a girl keeps her eyes open, it kind of fucks my rhythm up as well. He then went about cutting up the women, and videoing it as he did it, and taking pictures of each of the body parts, giving special loving care to the sex organs, which he put in a jar full of formaldehyde. And then he would go dispose of the unwanted parts of the body. It would take the cops exactly a month to catalog all the pornography and pictures and videos, and examine the jars and their contents from the apartment. And the cops were astonished that one man could achieve what the cab driver had done. Yeah, he were one sick fuck, all right. And when police interviewed him, he said that he wanted to make sure that every picture was released so the world could see his trophies and his artwork. The homicide detectives recorded that he was a psychopath and devoid of any human emotion. But psychiatrists were split down the middle on what they thought about the killer, with ones from Hong Kong and abroad testifying for and against the murderous cabbie, with those defending him saying that he had an uncontrollable psychosis, with all of them finding it quite interesting that the only time that he'd had penetrative sex was with the 17-year-old student. The first female that he could get intimate with was dead, and he was the reason why. It was in an obvious attempt to avoid the executioner's rope that he told investigators that he would show them where the other girls' bodies were, bringing them to several locations in the hills where they would eventually find two of the girls, lying in a fetal position, wrapped up in rice bags, missing their sexual organs, looking like goddamn religious icons. Lamb admitted that each day after the murders, he spent a day with the bodies, carving out their pussies and their breasts, with the pathologist saying it wasn't an easy task with the tools he had, and it would have taken great strength and fortitude. But I guess where there's a will, there is a way.
There are several truths. Your truth, my truth,
men were picked for the jury because it was considered that the more than 1,000 pieces of evidence to be presented in the case were too gruesome for women.
And the case? Well, it became a goddamn freak show, with every zip ahead in Hong Kong showing up for it. With half of them intrigued and the other half wanting blood, but all of them wanting a front row seat. While the family members, they wanted payback. With the prosecutors accusing Lamb of killing four young women and chopping them up. And they were planning to use his hobby as proof against him to send him back to his maker. Over 1,900 photos, 700 negatives, 1,500 color slides, and a shitload of videos, all a record of his debauchery. Once in front of the judge, he admitted to manslaughter, but not murder, claiming that he was a messenger of God, killing the whores on God's instruction. And he told the world that he was now to be known as the Rainy Night Killer, as it was the rains that triggered these urges. Being clearly unbalanced, he was giving the defense a lot to work with.
Australian psychiatrist David Barnes testified that he's convinced that Lamb is suffering from serious psychosis, a mental disease that can lay dormant for many years until it's jerked into activity by a possibly trivial incident.
But the prosecution ripped apart the cab driver's defense because it was clear that the murders weren't random and they were well planned and well executed. And they figured the fact that he used lights and a tripod was proof of that. And while we're on the subject of executing, with Lamb's IQ being almost a genius, no one was buying that he was insane. And they were certain that he was misleading all the psychiatrists that were siding with him. And now all of Hong Kong was waiting to hear the verdict of their most hated celebrity. And it was 20 days after the trial started, they came back with their verdict.
The seven-man jury began their deliberation at about 11:30 a.m. and shortly after 3 p.m., they returned with a unanimous verdict of murder on all four counts. In a hardly audible voice, Judge Baber then sentenced Lam Guo-Wan to death.
But Hong Kong's joy was to be short-lived. Because of current laws, the death penalty was overturned to life in jail. And Lam, the dirty Chinaman, whose hobby was to cut out women's breasts and their pussies and keep them in jars, was given a cozy life behind bars. Lam Guo-Wan is currently serving a life sentence in the Shek Pik prison. And by all accounts, the man who enjoys reading books on philosophy is enjoying his incarceration. Which I guess is a good thing, because he'll never see the light of day. Because in Hong Kong, a life sentence means a life sentence. The Jaws murders, or the Rainy Night Killer, with the possible exception of the Hello Kitty murder, is Hong Kong's highest profile murder case, and brought Hong Kong into the modern day use of forensic psychology. Lam's father and younger brother would continue to plead ignorance on having any knowledge of the crimes that were happening underneath their noses. His younger brother claimed that Lam would subject him to severe beatings if he touched any of his belongings, and that he only used the room to sleep, nothing more, and that him and his father were horrified by his brother's sick actions. The father, before he passed away, would use his life savings to set up a memorial for the victims. But nevertheless, the two were ostracized by friends, relatives, and the neighborhood in general, with many finding it impossible to believe that they didn't know they were sharing a house with jars of pickled pussy. You've been listening to another installment of a Dead Bug Podcast, and if you enjoyed it, tell your friends. Hell, tell your mother. Send her over to my place, too. I'm lonely. Actually, if you got a younger sister, send her instead. No disrespect.
Legion forever!
The book says... no more.